chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest my dab in the middle of it. Rest my dab in the middle. We are rest my dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got some very, very dire news this evening. After this week about that budget, that $1.7 billion spending bill, and it's just ridiculous what's going on in the country. But I'm going to start it off with Greg Reese, and he talks about this digital initiative that's underway by governments, and this is going to restrict us and control us in the way that we can spend our money. But here we go with Greg Reese.
A key component of human life is enlightenment. The awakening from the darkness of deception into the light of truth. The so-called Great Awakening has really been going on forever. And before MAGA and QAnon, the consensus was that the banks were at the top of the criminal pyramid structure. And while many of us assumed that a hidden hand was pulling their strings as well, we realized that their main goal was a digital currency and a cashless society. It was the subject of several documentaries.
The ultimate goal that these people have in mind is the goal to create a one-world government run by the banking industry, run by the bankers, right? There'll be no more cash. And this is giving me straight from Rockefeller himself. This is what they want to accomplish. And all money will be in your chips. And if you're like me or you, and you're protesting what they're doing, they can just turn off your chip. And you have nothing. You can't buy food. You can't do anything. It's total control of the people.
And that chip's connected to a database that has your purchasing records, what you do.
Everything. Everything is in there.
And it was also commonly discussed that they'll likely use Big Pharma to get us there.
Yes, there have been corrupt empires. Yes, they manipulate. Yes, there are secret societies. Yes, there have been oligarchies throughout history. And yes, today, in 2002, there is a tyrannical organization calling itself the New World Order, pushing for worldwide government, a cashless society, open borders, total and complete tyranny. And by creating open borders where there's no national sovereignty and only global bodies that control all the resources, by centralizing and socializing health care, the state becomes God, basically, when it comes to your health. And then by releasing diseases and viruses and plagues upon us, we then basically get shoved into their system.
But now it's as if everyone has just accepted it and found something else to fight about. Because the cashless society is being rolled out right now, and very few people seem bothered by it. In November of 2019, right before COVID, the Institute of Politics at Harvard Kennedy School had a live tabletop exercise called Digital Currency Wars, which looked at how the United States can continue to leverage economic power in a world of national digital currencies, such as the Chinese digital yuan, which is already heavily competing in trade against the U.S. dollar and seems to be at the forefront of centralized digital currencies. And it has an expiry date. If you don't spend it by then, it becomes worthless, so people can no longer save money. The Bank of International Settlements has announced that the central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations and will have technologies to enforce it. The Central Bank of Brazil is planning to launch their centralized digital currency in 2024. Israel is about to launch theirs. And the Bank of England is now preparing a UK digital currency. Italy's new Prime Minister, Meloni, is speaking out against the cashless society. but she seems to stand alone on the world stage. In the Federal Reserve's digital currency scheme, it appears that Hedera and Quant will be used on the technology side. They are already connected to everything. The cashless society is here, but everyone is talking about Hunter Biden's laptop. The goal was never to put an old senile puppet into the presidency to run havoc. The goal was to create a cashless society. And so while bringing Joe Biden to justice may feel like a victory, the tyrants are still getting exactly what they wanted. And once it's all said and done, then who will save you?
And if you're like me or you, and you're protesting what they're doing, they can just turn off your chip. And you have nothing. You can't buy food. You can't do anything.
Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
This digital currency that's going being rolled out all the time is ruinous for this country and for the world. But Senator Rand Paul, one of the leading senators, in my opinion, and many others think very highly of Rand Paul, being one of the sons of Ron Paul, which is one of the most stand-up people that has ever served in Congress in the House, gave a speech on the Senate floor, and he just castigated the senators as not taking other initiatives that they could have instead of voting for this horrendous $1.7 trillion spending bill. But here's what Rand Paul had to say, a very stand-up person.
Mr. President.
Senator from Kentucky.
If this is winning, I'm getting tired of winning. GOP leadership declares that this bill is a victory. But not unless you define victory as adding over $1 trillion in new deficit spending. So really there is a debate, a big debate within the Republican Party. Which is more important? Is it more important to add $45 billion to military spending, or is it more important not to add $1 trillion in deficit to our overall debt? We now have a $31 trillion debt. We're adding over $1 trillion a year, and yet Republican leadership says this is a victory because we're getting more military spending. But it's a victory at what expense? Are we actually more secure? Are we more safe? Is our national security more protected by spending more on the military? Or is our national security actually more threatened by incurring more debt? I would argue the latter. $31 trillion in debt is the number one threat to our national security. It's the week before Christmas, and predictably, Congress is considering yet another $1.7 trillion spending bill. We haven't had a chance to see or even read. Last night at 1:30 in the morning, the text of this 4,155-page spending spree was released. If you thought Congress couldn't possibly spend more money than it did last year, you would be wrong. The omnibus increases spending by 10% compared to last year's budget. You would think that nearly 2 years of 40-year high inflation would create some hesitation. You would think that a looming recession, spurred largely by exorbitant government spending, would give this Congress pause. But instead of taking a minute to consider what a responsible federal government budget looks like, we are instead placed behind the barrel of a gun, forcing us to choose between letting government expire or blindly passing a $1.7 trillion spending package that not only does not balance, but in fact spends over 10% more than last year. How does Congress spend taxpayers' money? Well, here's just a few examples of how your government currently spends money. We found that they spent last year $2.3 million injecting beagles with cocaine. It seems that they were curious. Their researchers were curious. Despite the pain they inflicted on these dogs, they were curious to know if cocaine causes adverse effects. Guess what? Read the newspaper. Read the news. Look at the addicts across our country. You think you need to inject beagles with cocaine to know that cocaine's a bad deal? $700,000 was spent to study how male parrots attract their mate. Really? We've got people who go hungry in our country. We got people that are trying to get out from behind poverty, and we're spending $700,000 studying how male parrots attract a female. We spent $187,000 to study whether or not dogs help kids cope. Of course they do. Ask any pet owner. Any pet owner could have told you, and we would have saved the taxpayer $187,000. We spent $118,000 to study if a metal replica, a robot of Marvel Comics evil warlord Thanos, could snap his fingers. $118,000, really? They apparently hired some dude to wear metal gloves and then try to snap his fingers. You know what? They found out that it's impossible to make a snapping sound with metal fingers. So robots of the world, be warned, it's hard to snap your fingers. While we continue to spend ourselves into oblivion, almost every single European nation is working to shrink their deficit. We routinely look to Europe and we say, look how liberal, look how big government, look how socialized. And yet most of Europe actually balances their annual budget. In 2019, 15 of 26 European countries ran budget surpluses. Another 8 European countries ran deficits of less than 3% of their GDP, while here in the U.S., in that same year, our deficit exceeded 6% of GDP. Europe is a glaring example that fiscal responsibility is possible. It's not a pipe dream. In fact, if we just cut our spending to what we spent in 2019, just 3 years ago, we would actually have a balanced budget today. Instead, we have jumped from a deficit that was 6% of our GDP to a deficit that is 12% of our GDP. We are adding debt at an alarming rate. We are adding debt at a greater pace than we ever have in the history of our country. Thankfully, some of our predecessors in Congress anticipated this lack of restraint, and they gave us some guideposts. They gave us some rules. They established guardrails and tools to keep our budget in check. For example, there is a rule called the Statutory PAYGO Act, or PAYGO for short. It requires that if you have new spending, it has to be offset by cuts elsewhere in the budget or elsewhere in the spending bill. Despite equipping our government with this necessary tool, though, Congress, with almost every budget in recent history, abuses its power, spends like drunken sailors, and ignores the fact that a day of reckoning is coming. Unfortunately, Congress has virtually 100% of the time voted to waive the PAYGO requirements. The American people demand accountability for the damage the big government spenders are doing to our families and to our nation's economic well-being. I will not allow my colleagues to escape accountability by hiding behind 4,000 pages of legislative text. I therefore will raise a budget point of order as this bill comes to the floor that will put every member of the Senate on record as to where they stand on fiscal responsibility. Unfortunately, most of the senators, even if they share my sentiments, they know that this point of order will be waived. They think they can quietly vote this way and no one will notice. Well, when American voters finally notice that people here are saying one thing at home and doing another, are promising balancing budgets and promising that deficits do matter, and then come up here and vote the opposite way, one day the American electorate will wake up and vote these hypocrites out. There are many other points of order that can be raised on this. The budget rules are actually of some value if we would actually obey the rules. Some of the people, you see them. You see them in their states. They're at campaign rallies. They'll tell you at town halls They'll tell you on the Senate floor that we absolutely must get spending under control. They'll tell you that the debt is a problem. They'll tell you that it's a terrible way to run government to have omnibuses. It's terrible to put $6 trillion together in one bill, release it at 1:30 in the morning, and pass it, and you can read about it and find out what is in it later. I suspect you will find a lot of promises, though, that will be violated as we vote on these PAYGO restrictions. Realize that this is the law. The law of the land says you can't do this. Congress, in passing this omnibus is breaking the law. The statute says very clearly they cannot do this. The only way they actually can evade responsibility is they change the law. They say, oh, well, it'd be embarrassing to get rid of the law. We will waive the law. So we have laws for decades that could actually right our fiscal house and put us on a course towards balancing our budget, and the rules are waived. They disobey their own rules. Congress does a disservice to the economy every time it waives these points of orders. What good are these procedures if they're never upheld? What started as formal guardrails to keep fiscal health of this nation strong is now merely just a messaging tool with no real significance that allows senators to get away with making promises they never intended to keep. That is why, in addition to raising this point of order, I am introducing an amendment to reform our budget procedures by raising the threshold. Let's make it less easy for them to break the rules. Currently, 60 senators can break the rules. Let's make it 2/3. Let's make it 67 senators necessary to break the rules. Why? Because they're bankrupting this country, both sides of the aisle. There's an unholy alliance between both parties. One party wants more welfare, one wants more warfare. It's either the military-industrial complex or the welfare-industrial complex. But what happens inevitably every year is spending goes up. People come and the journalists question, what will happen? What will happen with Christmas here? The only thing that is known to happen is this body, both parties, will continue to add to the debt. And there is a day. There is a day when you wake up and the dollar is worthless. Right now, the dollar is losing nearly 10% of its value on an annual basis. But there is a day when it's 10% a day or 10% an hour. Great countries have succumbed to the destruction of currency, and it happens through debt, through deficit financing, and it's coming to us. There is a day of reckoning. Unless we wake up and say enough's enough, we're going to do the prudent and rational thing. We're going to balance our budget. It's time that we take our nation's health seriously, and it's time that we show concern for those who are being damaged and devastated by inflation. The inflation at the grocery store, at the gas pump, who does it hurt the worst? It hurts those on fixed income, senior citizens. It hurts the working class and the poor, those who have most of their expenditures that go towards consumption, towards their food and groceries and gas, people who spend 90% of what they earn on buying the stuff that allows them to live are the people that are decimated by inflation. So if there are people in this body who do care, who do really care about those who are struggling with the burden of inflation, the best way is quit digging the hole deeper, quit adding the debt, and do what even European countries can do, and that's begin to balance our budget.
Follows is a couple of reports on the omnibus spending bill and what commentary and reports about what that spending bill contains, but it's going to the president's desk now, so it was approved by the House and the Senate. But here we go with a couple of reports, and the first one is by Fox, and the second one, I think these are both Fox reports, but here goes the first one.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kudlow. I'm David Asman, in for Larry Kudlow today. Well, the House is lining up with the Senate and voting to pass that $1.7 at least trillion-dollar omnibus monstrosity. One Democrat, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, voted no over defense funding in the bill, while 9 Republicans actually voted yes for it. The bill now heads to President Biden's desk. Let's bring in Ohio Congressman Brad Wenstrup for more. Congressman, I first want to quote to you from Kim Strassel's column today in the Wall Street Journal. She writes, quote, "If a satirist set out to describe a once admirable institution in decline, its members cheerfully passing off their laziness, secrecy, cowardliness, and graft as success, it'd be hard to compete with this week's Senate show." Now, that's tough. Do you agree with her?
Well, I think she's got some legs to stand on there, David. I really do. I'm very disappointed the way both the House and Senate have functioned, especially over the last few years. You know, the Senate really has not done much. And I just don't understand why Republicans in the Senate and against some in the House were even in favor of this. And this whole process is wrong the way it has taken place. Look, you can take a bill like that, which we hate seeing. We should be doing our appropriations bills one thing at a time, because then if there's things in there that you want and are in favor of, then you can vote for them. But you do a bill like this, there may be some things in there you love, defense, but there's just way too many things that are harmful to the country. And I think that needs to be taken into consideration. And I'm just surprised in the Senate, where the Republicans really have some clout because of the rules over there, that they didn't act upon it. And so, look, we're about ready to take over the House. We have the responsibility to do things right, get our appropriations bills done right. But I don't know what the Senate will do from there. And so yeah. Kim has a lot of things to say. I read that article, David, and, you know, she's pretty hot, and there's a lot of things to be said.
Yeah, she's the best, and she's seen a lot of this. So for her to say it's the worst she's ever seen says a lot. Actually, the worst, I thought, from my own perspective, was Senator McConnell. Now, he is the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, and he was saying that he was proud of the bill. I'm quoting him. Proud was the word he used, saying it achieved everything that Republicans represent. Really, do you agree with that? I mean, first of all, Republicans used to represent fiscal responsibility. I don't see anything that is fiscally responsible about this bill.
Well, in total, it's not. Now, he may be pointing to certain things that are within the bill that are consistent with Republican ideals. I certainly got some things in the bill itself, but it wasn't enough for me to vote yes, because the majority of the bill was just way out of hand, way out of line, not good for America currently, and certainly not good for the next generation. And if this is going to continue to be the trend, Kimberly Strassel is completely right that we have a real problem on our hands. And this once glorious institution is certainly struggling right now.
And, you know, the Senator McConnell, I don't mean to just beat up on Senator McConnell. There were a lot of other Senate Republicans that did what I think was horrible in terms of going along with this process. But he was saying that you either pass this thing or we have a government shutdown. And that's another thing that Kim Strassel was good at saying. There is a third option. You pass a CR, you send it into the next year when Republicans will take over the House. You guys would have more clout to argue and to debate and to take certain things out, maybe to put other things in. Senator Lee, though, was very close yesterday in getting a deal, bringing Sinema on, now independent Senator Sinema, and Joe Manchin, who has also occasionally voted in the right direction. Apparently they were on, but there was a last-minute deal. Here's Senator Lee talking to Larry about it yesterday. I'm going to roll tape. Oh, we don't have the side. Well, Senator Lee was on yesterday with Larry Kudlow saying essentially what happened, that they were just inches to getting that deal passed until Senator Schumer offered something. Maybe someday we'll find out what it was to Senator Sinema. It was all focused around immigration and Title 42. What happened? What do you know about what happened yesterday about those last minute wheelings and dealings?
I don't know what they are in detail. I just know that happened. And, you know, that isn't necessarily uncommon. You know, how do you get one more person on a bill, et cetera? What is it going to take? That's been done throughout our history. But why are we doing all this in the last minute and look at the thousands of pages that are part of this bill that no one had a chance to read in 48 hours?
Yeah.
I don't know how you vote for something that you really don't have an opportunity to review. And,
well,
you know,
by the way,
I really
Congressman, just, forgive me for interrupting, but a lot of people didn't. They sent in their proxy. I understand there were about 230 active proxy letters that went to this. Nobody wanted their fingerprints on a murder weapon, you know?
Well, yeah, that's been going on for the past year, and we are going to put an end to that proxy voting in the House of Representatives. I do give the Senate credit that they never instituted that, but we are a much better body when we don't have the proxy voting. But whether you're there or you're not, you can still get the bill, but do you have time to actually consume it and read it and go over it with your staff and look at the pluses and minuses? But we really knew so many of the minuses for some time. I mean, it's really disheartening to see how much money was being spent on pet projects that really didn't have to do with infrastructure or national security or our national health, which
they were
really
vanity. They were vanity projects. And there were two senators leaving, one Republican, one Democrat. Democrat Pat Leahy, Senator Shelby was the Republican. Senator Shelby got $640 million of these vanity projects. I mean, that's just absurd. And I wish him well in his retirement, but this is a pretty shameful way to go out.
Well, and it certainly isn't fair to the next generation of Americans that supposedly are going to have to pay for it. I don't know when we actually say we're bankrupt, but we're getting closer and closer all the time. Again, I'm looking forward to it. I think in the House of Representatives, as far as Republicans go, we are determined and ready to go, and we're going to try and find ways that we get these bills done, we get them to the floor, we get them over to the Senate in time. The Senate can be working on theirs, but they really haven't been. They were just too interested in still going after Donald Trump, who is no longer the President of the United States, and other issues like that. Of course, that was in the House, too. And we're ready to do some work. I did not take this job to sit around and play these games. I take my military career serious as a doctor. I take that very serious, and I take legislating very serious. Yeah. And we've been sidetracked every step of the way, we've got to start acting more like CEOs of a business that want to make things happen so that we function properly as the United States of America and set our priorities on things like our defense and our budget.
But where do Republicans go from here? I mean, are we just locked into this bill for the next year? Is there any kind of fiddling that you can do to cut here and strike some things from what we were expecting to pay money on and maybe put back things like the 100% deduction, something that was very helpful for small businesses in America?
Absolutely. We've got to do those things like that, and then just not appropriate some of the things that have been passed now and draw that back. And you mentioned the R&D expensing.
Yeah.
That's another tax on corporations at
Absolutely.
A time when our supply chain is reliant on China. That's the last thing we want to be doing. We need to allow cures to be developed in health, and we need to make sure that we're providing and manufacturing the things that we need for our national security and our national health. And this takes it in the wrong direction completely. And if people didn't recognize our supply chain problem due to COVID, I don't know that they ever will.
Yeah, particularly going into a recession. I mean, most economists say we're going into a recession next year. And just as that's happening, they're pulling out some of the benefits for small businesses. It's really disgraceful. But Congressman, having said all that, have a very Merry Christmas. Wonderful New Year. Thank you for your service, both in the military and as a doctor. We really appreciate you coming in today. Have a great holiday season.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for getting it.
Absolutely.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You very much.
The next interview is with Mike Huckabee, former governor of Arkansas. And here's what he had to say about Congress. And he doesn't think very, very much, very highly of Congress. And then we're going to follow that by an FTX special that just came out end of this week that implicates possibly Bankman-Fried in perhaps subsidizing by meals or whatever some of the top regulators, key officials. But we'll play that right after this Huckabee assessment of Congress and this spending bill. But here we go with Mike Huckabee.
Look who's back with us, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. Merry Christmas to you, Governor. It's good to see you.
Merry Christmas to you too, Liz. Thank you for having me.
So what did you think of this? There was no debate, no hearings, Congress not reading the bill. Half of them did not physically show up. They showed up by proxy. I mean, federal spending keeps going up and up. And now households, you know this, they spent an extra $10,000 a year under Joe Biden. What do you think of all this?
Well, there's a couple of things that are really just disgusting. One is the process itself. These are people that had all year to work on the budget and didn't. And then they wait until the very last minute and pretend that it's a big emergency, that they've got to get it done because they got to go home for Christmas. The truth is, these are like some college frat boys that never studied, partied all semester, and then did an all-nighter right before the finals, and can't imagine why the professors are ticked off with their failing grades. Well, the fact is, this is not how you run a government, but this is how this Congress has behaved. That's part of it. The second thing that is absolutely atrocious is the content of the bill. This thing has more pork in it than an Arkansas Razorback football game. I've never seen anything that is more disgraceful than a $1.7 trillion bill filled with all sorts of nonsense that has nothing to do with helping taxpayers get back on their feet financially. And the Republicans who voted for this ought to be ashamed of themselves. They should have stood tall, showed some spine. Instead, all they did was say, yeah, whatever you need, Chuck, we're there with you.
Yeah, you know, we're showing the pork now. We're also going to show House Minority, this is just a sample of some of the pork. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy and Congressman Chip Roy, Governor, today they had some really fiery floor speeches against the spending. Watch this.
They cared so much about the people that Senator Leahy gets numerous projects named after himself. Because the people wanted that. Oh, Shelby gets something named after him, too. Oh, Speaker Pelosi. She gets a couple things named after her. Because the people are more important than the politics. Because that's what the people of America want right now.
Half this body's not even going to be here. And they're lying. They're lying on forms saying that they're voting by proxy for COVID, and it's a lie. And half this body's going to do it, you know it, and it's destroying this country. I'm not going to just sit here and roll over on this. This is going to continue.
They're really angry. And here's the thing. I mean, we understand that parts of the bill, they seem good. There's 300 new border agent funding, but then they cut back on the border later on. And Governor, there's an increase for things like disaster aid and, you know, mental health issues. That's important stuff, but it's a fact that they have not passed budget bills on time for the last 26 years. They work less than half the time as the average American works. The last time they met their October 1st deadline was 1996. And Governor, we're seeing monuments to me that Kevin McCarthy pointed out. We've got a new Nancy Pelosi federal building in San Francisco, the new Nancy Pelosi fellowship program for the State Department, and more. So what is going on here? It's all in the dead of night kind of deal making and pork.
You know, if you make a big pot of stew, you can say there's a lot of good stuff in there. There's carrots and peas and there's some beef and there's some wonderful, wonderful ingredients. But if in the midst of the stew you put a teaspoonful of rat poison, you've ruined the stew. So all of these members of Congress who say, well, there's some good stuff in this bill, I'm not going to argue that, but there's poison in this bill. And I really felt like that what Chip Roy and Kevin McCarthy said needs to be said on the Senate floor. And I wish some of the Republicans, 18 of them, would have thought about how ridiculous it makes them look to vote for Chuck Schumer and this horrible bill. They might as well have taken their own little teaspoon, put some rat poison, and dumped it in there and said, yeah, some of it it'll kill you, but there's some really good stuff in that pot of stew.
And to your point, you know, they want to spend trillions of dollars in a bill that they didn't read as they demand details on the little tiny $600, you know, phone app transactions we do with, like, Venmo from the rest of us. And they want, you know, tens of thousands of new IRS agents to go after the little guy for the spending. I mean, there's breaking news on this, Governor. The IRS announced it will delay until next year this new $600 1099 reporting requirement for phone app transactions like Venmo. So taxpayers can better prepare. But, Governor, it's still going to happen in 2024.
Well, and 87,000 new IRS agents is included in that bill. Why do we need those guys? I mean, really, what is it they're going to do? They're not going after billionaires. There aren't that many billionaires to go after. What they're going to go after are all these just low-end, very low-income taxpayers, and they're going to be just going after him for $100 here and $600 there.
Yep.
And it's going to just become even more ridiculous than our tax system already is. It's a disgrace, and this is the worst Christmas present that they could give us. Basically, Congress just gave us a lump of coal.
So the other thing, too, is, well, we wish we got coal and natural gas and oil in our stocking from this administration.
Yeah.
But, Governor, there's no amendments to keep in place Title 42 after President Biden is getting rid of it. He's got more than 300 executive actions to weaken the border. He says the pandemic is still on, but he's getting rid of that pandemic border policy. We need your reaction to this. This new book by Christopher Whipple claims the president was furious about the border crisis he created to the point he was cursing behind the scenes. Do you believe that?
If it is, it'd be one of the first signs that he had some reality about what was going on at the border. He seems to be oblivious to it, as does his entire administration and the Department of Homeland Security secretary, who should be fired, if not impeached. The fact is, this is a border that's wide open. Joe Biden has been inattentive. He assigned Kamala Harris to look after it. She finally went down, took a quick look, didn't do anything. Joe Biden still hasn't been there. And he just says he's got more important things to do. Well, tell that to the people along the border, both in Texas and Arizona. They think it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, so to your point, if he is so upset about it, why didn't he just go to the border? And why does he refuse to take questions like he did yesterday? He wouldn't take questions at the end of his Christmas address. You're going to see that, and you're going to see Senator Lindsey Graham weighing in. Watch this.
Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and all the best of the new year. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you.
Mr. President, do you think the other border is yours?
He's done nothing to fix the problem. He's never been to the border. It is so unconscionable for him not to go to the border and listen to the agents and people trying to control the border, what life is like along our southern border. The fact that he doesn't go shows to me he's disconnected and he doesn't give a damn. Yeah, he doesn't have to drop F-bombs in the White House.
We don't even have
the
November numbers
yet. Get your ass out of the White House and go to the border.
But why didn't Senator Lindsey Graham and the GOP senators fight to keep that Title 42 amendment in place, Governor?
That's a great question. You know, and frankly, I don't care that much whether Joe Biden actually physically and personally goes to the border. What I care about is that he delegates somebody that would actually do something to seal that border and pretend that America is a sovereign country and we're not just an open door for any and everybody to come through, and we put more restrictions on American citizens than we do illegal immigrants. That's what I'd like to see him do.
Governor Huckabee, again, Merry Christmas to you and yours. Happy holidays, everybody. It's good to see you, Governor.
Thanks. Merry Christmas, Liz.
Thanks for spending time with us. Okay.
Next, we've got a little bit of a scandal going brewing here about FTX and Bankman-Fried, and whether or not he had dinner with some of the top regulators, and they changed all of a sudden from one regulatory body to another one. But here we go with that interview. Very, very insightful stuff. It's just beginning right now.
And this is a Fox Business Alert. We have breaking news. Dan Berkovitz, the general counsel of the Securities and Exchange Commission, resigned today amid speculation that FTX mastermind Sam Bankman-Fried was actually trying to buy off regulators as well as politicians. Now, earlier this week, the Washington Examiner had a terrific piece, a revelation that in October 2021, Berkovitz was wined and dined at a swanky D.C. restaurant by SBF and his top lieutenants. Now, at the time, Berkovitz was commissioner of the Commodity Futures Commission. That's one of the agencies that regulates cryptocurrencies. According to emails that were obtained by the watchdog group Protect the Public's Trust, Berkovitz paid just a fraction of the cost of the dinner. But the real question is whether Berkovitz's switch to the more powerful SEC was arranged by SBF's contacts. Still early in the investigation, but it seems like SBF's insurance might have gone beyond his political contributions. Joining me now is Droy Murdoch, senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research and Fox News contributor. So, Droy, there's definitely enough smoke here for a House investigation after January, right?
There's a lot of smoke. You know, when we talk about this sort of thing, we have a couple
problems or potential problems. One is corruption. You know, was this Berkovitz guy, you know, on the take? Is he a crook? Or maybe he's an honest and decent individual, but you have the appearance of corruption. The appearance of corruption is the kind of thing that grinds down public faith in institutions. Either one's a problem, and lawyers know you're not supposed to have not even the appearance of impropriety, and this at least appears improper. Look, it'd be one thing if you said, look, come into my office, we'll have a nice discussion, we can talk about what your concerns are, and we'll keep that in mind as we regulate your company or industry. But having these lovely dinners at a beautiful Indian restaurant in Washington, D.C., that's the kind of thing that makes people think that some monkey business is afoot.
And DeRoy, there's another piece of this whole scenario, which is that another participant at that dinner was FTX general counsel, the general counsel for SBF. His name is Ryan Miller. I may be mispronouncing his first name, but Mr. Miller worked before he was with FTX. He worked with SEC Chairman Gary Gensler when Gensler was head of the CFTC. So these regulators, you know, they work for these organizations, these federal organizations, then they come out in the private sector, make their money with somebody like SBF, and then maybe even use their old contacts with the agencies. It really is more the definition of what the swamp is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The swamp, or to use a different metaphor, it's, you know, the classic revolving door of people going in and out of the private sector, into the government, back in the private sector, you know, make a little bit of money in the government. That sets you up to make a lot of money in the private sector. And then you've got, of course, these lovely outings to D.C. restaurants and elsewhere. And again, at worst, it's corrupt. At the very least, it looks funny. And that sort of thing is what leads people, it's the kind of thing that leads people to believe we've got sort of a rigged system. Not good for the American people.
It's like the old scenario.
The new GOP Congress can come in.
It's like the old scenario of the prosecutors
who are Congress can investigate this, the better.
Yeah, but it's like old prosecutors who prosecuted drug dealers and then they get out of the prosecution business and start defending the drug dealers. I mean, you see that revolving door, and it may not be illegal. We don't want to prejudge anything, but it definitely deserves investigation. Well, speaking of the swamp, let us talk a little bit about this swampy bill that just passed through the House. I think it's going to add up to about $2 trillion, by the way, because the CBO hasn't been able to price it yet. But once they do, it always prices up, right?
Very often goes up, and what you basically had is Congress buying something without a price tag on it, and not for, you know, a couple million dollars, but as you say, $1.7 trillion, could be $2 trillion, who knows even more. This bill is 4,155 pages. That's three times as long as War and Peace, and to me, the big villain, the major villain in this story is Senator McConnell, this so-called GOP, quote, leader, unquote. He very easily could have said, look, we're not going to go along with this. The GOP Congress comes in 11 days from now. Oh, that's a week from Tuesday, we're going to give Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans a chance to write a budget that doesn't spend all this money, have things in it like the Michelle Obama trail, a plankton study. There will be money for the U.S. border versus this bill, which has no money for the U.S. border, but does have money for the border control in Egypt and Jordan.
Yeah.
Rather than let that happen, Mitch McConnell just sat down with his pal, Chuck Schumer, and said, okay, let's castrate the GOP House, which just got elected, and tie their hands through October 1. There will be no power of the purse in the U.S. House until October 1st for 10 months. Mm-hmm. This is abominable, and I blame Mitch McConnell completely for this. He could have stopped this. He didn't. Shame on him. The sooner he goes back to Kentucky, the better.
DeRoy, he said he was proud of it. He said he was proud of this bill, that it represented the interests of the Republican Party. I thought fiscal responsibility was one of the key interests of the Republican Party.
I don't think this represents the interests of the GOP. I think it's a complete attack on the interests of the GOP. There's nothing fiscally responsible about this. And the fact that, in terms, not just the spending all, but to deprive the GOP House of the power of the purse, which is probably the biggest power it has, and not because, look, it'd be one thing if the GOP House didn't come into power until August. Okay, we can wait 2 months. Big deal. 10 months, they will not be able to say, look, FBI, you're not getting any money until you tell us what you did regarding the censorship of the Hunter Biden laptop story. Look, HHS, you don't get any money until you tell us everything you know about the COVID-19 origins,
right,
et cetera. And the White House doesn't get any money until you hand over documents. This is what oversight is, and for 10 months, about half the time for which they were elected, they won't have that power, thanks to Mitch McConnell and his complete perfidy. Biggest traitor on the right is Mitch McConnell.
You
shame
know,
on him.
That's a terrific point, that they've lost the leverage power that they would have had to enforce the kind of rules that we're going to need as we see these investigations go into fast speed, particularly on things like FTX and what Sam Bankman-Fried was doing and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we need leverage to get people to do things, and a lot of that leverage is now gone. It's a damn shame. DeRoy Bernard. Yeah.
And it wasn't, I agree.
Go ahead.
It wasn't lost. It was given away by Mitch McConnell.
All right.
Mitch McConnell gave it. It wasn't lost. Mitch McConnell gave that away.
Yeah.
Terrible. Shame on him.
I hope over this holiday weekend you're going to be able to take care of that. It sounds like you have what a lot of people here have, the same disease that's been making rounds. So take care of yourself. Enjoy Christmas. Have a wonderful holiday.
I want to wish everyone out there a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we'll have been broadcasting, either on GCN Network or on these podcasts for a little over 16 years, done over 900 programs, interviewed hundreds, virtually hundreds of different book authors and everything. Want to remind the listening audience to come in. I'm going to embed a video by Amazing Polly about this. They're trying to get a peace accords with the COVID-19 opposites up here. You know, she makes a really good. And then we're going to embed also an interview that Alex had about a microscopic examination of blood whenever the vaccine was mixed in with human blood, and that you need to see. So we're going to embed that also. But come in to thesecrettruth.com and look at that. And this last little clip is about the Anunnaki, the Nephilim. This goes back to Babylon. Some of the earliest beginnings of culture and dominance and so forth and kingships. And I thought I'd play this just to end it up to give you a little bit of taste what Dean Henderson is all about. And he's a fine author in this area. But here we go. With a interview by Dean Henderson and Jeff Rentz conducted that interview. Here we go now.
Been busy. I've been working on a book again. Got it pretty much done. I've been editing now. Just got about 6 more chapters to edit, and then hope to have that out real soon. But it's called Royal Bloodline Wetiko and the Great Remembering. And just goes through the whole history of the royals, who they are, and starting in Sumeria when they landed here. And
They
landed here. The Anunnaki, the Nephilim, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
It's just even more, when you start getting into it, I seriously use, just Wikipedia a lot, which I hate, but, that's where all the drones go that want to bust your chops, and I thought, well, let's use that. Well, Wikipedia won't connect the dots, but all the information's there, and if you could connect the dots, which I did, there's just a streamless continuity to the whole thing. For example, they didn't just force the Sumerians into agriculture from hunting and gathering. I mean, right at that exact same time all around the world is when agriculture popped up. About 8,000-9,000 years ago, Mexico, right. Peru, India, China, everywhere. And this explains the building of all these temples at Tikal and Machu Picchu and, Angkor Wat and all these, pyramids, all these structures that we know that humans couldn't build. And they went and they used slave labor, to build these things. And, then they squatted on the grounds and forced the people into agriculture to feed the temple and to feed the cities that surrounded it, which were on full administered by Anunnaki hybrids. After they first, went to South Africa and enslaved those people to mine the gold to seal up the ozone layer. But it all popped up at the exact same time. It wasn't just Sumeria. And that's always baffled archaeologists, because why would man, move from hunting and gathering to agriculture? But the book's really about what the crown did to our sense of who we are. Because once you go from hunting and gathering to farming, You know, nature, we have these reciprocal relationships with nature. It's all about relationships. You know, all indigenous peoples believe they're related not just to each other, but to animals and to trees and to rocks and everything. And once you move to agriculture, instead of nature being a friendly place that provides for everything you need, which it is, because that's what Wakantanka, you know, did. He created all this for people. Mm-hmm. And once you move into agriculture, you know, nature becomes the enemy. So the people get paranoid because all of a sudden you got wolves coming after your sheep, and you got hawks coming after your chickens, and you got weather messing up your crops. And so it, right away, it pits humans against nature.
Adversarial relationship immediately.
And that's what the beginning of our pretty much our being dumbed down by these aliens. And, you know, they're saying, like, oh, we're only human. Well, it's just stupid, because what people should say when somebody screws up is, well, he's not human enough. You know, that's where the name humane comes from. The meaning of humane is to be human, and to be human is good, but they forced us into agriculture. Then they forced us into cities with their industrialism and again, you know, basically switch from slave labor to wage slave labor, because actually it's cheaper because slaves cost money. But I just found a lot of interesting things. You know, there was just this seamless transition. You know, they started in Samaria with King Sargon, which was the first world king. There was no kings here before that. And he was Anunnaki, and he, you know, gave way to Marduk and Nebuchadnezzar. And they started the cities of Babylon, who were in, built the Tower of Babel, which was meant to confuse the languages of the people at that time. And Indians say the same thing. A lot of tribes talk about a time when they could all communicate with each other, and they could communicate with the animals. I mean, like, for real, in a language that everybody understood. And this Tower of Babel changed all that. And so why would you do that? Well, because you're colonizing the planet. So you have to interrupt the communications of people, because you don't want them talking about these people that just showed up and started speaking these weird languages, which is the meaning of Semitic, by the way. Semitic is not about Jews or Israel. It's about it just describes a family of languages that just suddenly sprang up in the Middle East about 8,500 years ago. Mm-hmm. And this is the Anunnaki, and they also called themselves the Hittites and the Akkadians, tribe of Dan, different names. Tribe of Dan turned into the Merovingian bloodline. At the base of Mount Zion, and Zion doesn't mean anything with Israel or Jews either. It means Sion, transliteration Sion, which is to graft. So from the very beginning, they've tried to graft the DNA of themselves, the Anunnaki, onto the human race. And they're doing that today still. And mostly now, it's all about, you know, initiating people into their cult and what they believe in. But yeah, just amazing, because the pharaohs all have these elongated skulls. None of them spoke Egyptian. Cleopatra VII was the last Egyptian pharaoh. And immediately after the pharaohs went down, and that was about 4,000 BC, you know, because they had moved to Egypt from Samaria. And they also moved to the Khazarian, to the Caucasus, where they were known as the Khazarians. Mm-hmm. And in Babylon, the Rodanite bankers started usury, and they started the language of Yiddish as a secret language, because they used it on the Silk Road trade routes, because the Li family in China, which is also an Anunnaki dynasty, controlled the Chinese end of it, and the Rothschilds, which were then known as the Baccarats, and then mm-hmm. they were the Bowers, and then they were the Rothschilds. But the Baccarats controlled the other side of it in what is now the Black Sea area. And they were the Khazarians. And they called themselves Ashkenazi Jews because Noah's grandson was Ashkenaz. So they started, basically they were fake Jews. They weren't Jews, but they called themselves that to kind of hide behind Noah, give themselves
That's right.
a religious veneer.
That's right. Yeah.
So they could, you know, so they could do their thing and say, oh, God commanded us to do it. And then they created the Talmud, you know, at the same time. Well, then, as soon as Cleopatra was done, it was just right around the birth of Christ, I think it was 49 B.C., when the pharaoh was finished, she had an affair with Julius Caesar, Roman general, and Caesar ordered the burning of the Alexandria Library, and they moved across, and they did become the Roman Empire. I mean, just that seamlessly. And then the Roman Empire, which the Holy Roman Empire, that ended 9 years before the British Empire began. And the city of London had already been founded like in, you know, the 100 AD. It was called Londinium at that time. Hmm. And it really took off in the 15th century when shipbuilding became a big deal. And that's when Lloyd's Bank, which, you know, had been, you know, basically became the insurance market for the world.
Lloyd's went and back that far. That's fascinating.
Yeah, they did. Really old. And older than the Bank of England. So is Coutts Bank. So is Barclays. Mm-hmm. And anyway, they so in other words, this empire that we're taught, you know, we're taught that the Roman Empire died and the British Empire died and you know, oh, they died because of the mistakes they made.
They just morphed.
No. Exactly. They just relocated to a new zip code, the same bloodline, which is one single bloodline in the end. And these are the monarchs, and these are the royalty, and these are the people that are connected to that off-planet force that you're talking about. They've always hated humanity. That's why they funded Malthus and Hobbes and John Locke and all these people. In fact, they found out Hobbes, Locke, and Malthus were all members of the Royal Society. You know, Thomas Hobbes was a tutor for William Cavendish, who later became a prince. And they were all connected, and not just connected, but sponsored by the royals to put out this garbage about, you know, Malthus was whole. He was the eugenics, the founder of eugenics. I mean, his whole thing was, you know, if we're too successful, we'll go down. Or, you know, if there's too many poor people, we should just let them die. And things like this, and it's still being taught in universities today. And people like Tom Hanks go around talking about, you know, Malthus was this great. But they were all sponsored by the royals. So basically, you know, Jesus, it's Christmas, right? So people do different things to celebrate. I wrote a book to expose the people who killed Jesus Christ who still hold the spirit destiny in their castle, the Habsburgs, today in Austria. And they killed them, these same people that we're fighting, the same people that spread COVID around the world. It's called coronavirus. Translate that into English, it means crown venom.
That's a little long-term history there. But I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. And we're going to put, we're going to put an article up by Shamatsu, who's a fine American Japanese writer. And come in and click off on that. Amazing Polly will be embedded. And then an interview with the doctor that examined some of the slides that contain vaccine and human blood. And that will tell you instantly when you start seeing what these vaccines do to blood. They coagulated, they start attacking some of the cells, blood cells and so forth. And it's not a pretty picture. There are other people on the web that are investigating free iron in the blood that's possibly caused by the vaccine breaking away iron from the hemoglobin molecule. And so that's beginning to, we believe, by some people, researchers, causing a lot of other sickness and a lot of other illness. But some of this stuff, because of the danger that the vaccines did to the immune system, have raised the possibility of you manifesting other diseases that are been abated by the immune system. But when the immune system has been damaged, then you have a rise of those bacteria and so forth, causing all kinds of other ailments and different organs and so forth. And that's probably what we're seeing now, that we're seeing people with meningitis and other things that arise because of a damaged immune system. But anyway, Merry Christmas to each and every one of you. I love each and every one of you in the listening audience out there. And anyway, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and God bless each and every one of you. Good night.